Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I'm a guy who knows what he's talking about every once in a while. Awfully happy that you joined me today, and thank you for inviting me into your car or your home or wherever you are listening. I know a lot of listeners like to check out the podcast because they're working right now, and they get home and they flip on the podcast. They're all available on myfaithradio.com. And the website's pretty cool, so if you go check it out, and if you're just getting to learn more about us, if you go to myfaithradio.com, you can get a welcome packet. You just click that little box and say, I wouldn't mind one of those welcome packets, and we'll send it right out to you. So we're going to be joined by Rob Louie in just a minute from dailysignal.com, and we're going to find out all that we need to know about what's going on in Washington, D.C., where he works and lives, and we're going to find out how crazy the world is right now, and he's the only one that can sort this out for me. I'm writing a song about how important it is to have Rob on my show on Tuesdays, and right now I don't have lyrics or melody or anything yet, but I'm working on it. So I think that's the key, is to always be working on it. All right, let's take a little break, and we come back. Rob Louie will be with us.
I'm Dr. Alan Kierden, president of the University of Northwestern and Northwestern Media. We believe in providing affordable Christian education that gives students opportunities to grow intellectually and spiritually. We do not accept federal or state funding beyond financial aid awarded to students. That's because we want the freedom to provide a biblical education without hindrance. And we rely on people like you for support. So please visit us at unwsp.edu/give.
As our 70th anniversary approaches, we're celebrating. Join us for a night of comedy, music, and ministry. If you love Triple Espresso, you're going to really love this. Join Bill Arnold and the writers of Triple Espresso as we celebrate 70 years of radio ministry. Michael Pierce Donnelly, Bob Stromberg, and Bill Arnold will keep you laughing with a great evening of laughter and music. One night only, 7 p.m. March 16th at the Knight Performance Hall, the University of Northwestern in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tickets are on sale now at myfaithradio.com.
We love Rob Louie on Tuesdays. That's all I have so far.
But there's my song. So I've been working on it. And thank you to Rebecca Maxwell for that fine
subpar performance.
That fine interpretation of my song I'm writing, just because I need to let Rob know how much I value his contributions on Tuesday. He's the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Rob, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back with you, Bill.
Thank you so much. And there is so much craziness right now in Washington. I don't even know where I want to start. Let's start with the border wall. Is that going
to
happen?
Well, that's a good place to start, okay, because there's a lot at stake here this week, as we all know. I mean, we have lived through a government shutdown already once this year, and we could be headed that way again if President Trump decides to reject the compromise deal that the members of Congress have put forward. Of course, the compromise falls far short of what the president is asking for. The president wants $5.7 billion to build up to 200 miles of border barriers and fencing and walls, and this really only delivers about $1.4 billion. So not what the president wanted, and it's unclear at this hour whether or not he's going to go along with it.
Well, now Nancy Pelosi said, I will put up $1. And I think that was a little bit in his face. But now they're at 1.4 or 1.7. So who's caving in?
Well, so that's a good point. I mean, Pelosi's also said that she will accept whatever agreement this bipartisan committee comes up with. So
okay,
she is on the hook for taking this. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that respect. I mean, on the one hand, Trump could express his disappointment, which I would expect him to do since it's not what he asked for. While at the same time, he might settle on this as a decent compromise to at least get things started. I mean, you did have pretty much everybody in Democratic leadership and a lot of the rank-and-file Democrats say absolutely no way would they spend anything on a border wall. And the fact that they're acknowledging now that they will be willing to spend over $1 billion, which would allow, you know, I think up to 50 miles of fencing or wall. Not an insubstantial amount, but certainly more could probably be done. But there's other opportunities, perhaps, for Trump to exercise some of his authority to get the full wall built that that he sees necessary.
Yeah. Now, Rob, can he accept that money and still shut down the government?
No, if he accepts the money, the government would reopen. So what basically needs to happen here is the House and Senate will need to pass this bill. Of course, the House is controlled by Democrats, the Senate by Republicans. So you do have to come up with a compromise that is acceptable to both parties. If both parties, and it seems that they likely will, pass this legislation, it'll go to the president's desk. Now, Trump will be faced with the decision of either to sign it, in which case the government would stay open. It is open now, and it would stay open through the end of the year, the fiscal year, which is September 30th. So we wouldn't have another bill. We wouldn't have to talk about another shutdown at least until October, probably. But if Trump decides to veto it, then you're absolutely correct. I mean, it would go back to Congress. They could either override his veto, which is unlikely, or the government shuts down come Saturday.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be crazy. I think he's going to eventually get his way because he's pretty determined to fulfill one of his campaign promises to get that wall built. And I keep finding it, disconcerting that everybody has a different opinion and there's always, or let's call it a fence, not a wall. And, you know, it's, I don't know. How do you make sense of that, Rob?
Well,
because a wall is immoral, according to what the Democrats say.
And they do say that, and I think that this is the dilemma that some Christians and conservatives find themselves in, because obviously we believe in the rule of law, and we would like people not to break that law and come across the border illegally. We also recognize that there are people who are doing it the right way and have been waiting for quite a long time to go through the system to become legal U.S. citizens. But then at the same time, I think you're right. The Democrats see our country as a place where people are striving to have a better life. I agree with that.
I mean, too.
I think that we do live in the greatest country on earth.
I agree.
At the same time, you know, you have to have a system. I mean, we're seeing this play out in other countries. I mean, look at how people are fleeing Syria. Look at how people are fleeing Venezuela, going to Colombia. And now Colombia is suffering with some real major challenges in terms of its healthcare system and ways to support all of these refugees who are coming across. So there are real implications to illegal immigration. And I think that President Trump has tended to focus on some of the most dire circumstances in which they're bringing across drugs and bringing violence to communities and you know, killing Americans in gruesome ways, as he pointed out in the State of the Union last week. Those are some of the stories that tend to be the ones that he points to. And those are the ones that I think have animated so much of this debate and why here we are now 2 years into his presidency. We're still talking about this issue that really, I think, was one of the signature reasons people elected him in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, your boys are in grade school, aren't they?
They are, yes.
So I don't want to be talking about the Mueller investigation when they're in college.
Good luck with that. Well, President Trump will not be in office
That's true.
At that point, but who knows if this will be settled by then. I mean, this is something that continues to drag on, and we certainly saw high-stakes congressional hearing last Friday with the acting attorney general.
Yeah, and also John Dowd, who is a veteran criminal offense attorney, said that there's a good chance that this whole thing will end in silence, and they will call the 2-year probe a terrible waste of time.
Well, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
So there is a push among some lawmakers to try to make the report public, so it doesn't end in silence. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, what has happened so far is Robert Mueller has certainly indicted and gone after certain people who are involved in Trump's orbit. Those people who have either lied to federal prosecutors or done things that are illegal, and they are suffering the consequences of that going through our judicial system. But yes, you're absolutely correct. What we don't have yet is any indication of the wrongdoing by the president himself. And I think that here we are coming up on another anniversary of this investigation, and it's time that I think we probably should wrap things up. And look, there's nobody who wants to wrap it up more than the president himself,
right?
Because he recognizes he needs to get focused on re-election, and the last thing he wants hanging over him is this uncertainty with Robert Mueller.
Yeah. You know, Rob, I wonder if politicians, if they just inherently have difficulty telling the truth. I don't know, when you are grasping for power, you will pretty much do anything and say anything, won't you?
It seems that way.
Yeah.
You have to wonder what's going on through their mind, though.
Well, I do want to believe there's good people that want to serve the country, and I do want to believe that there are people that know and love the Lord that want to make a difference. So I just want to cut all people lots of grace. I saw this; it caught my attention. Kamala Harris claims to have smoked pot in college while listening to Tupac and Snoop. All right,
yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Well, here's the problem. Tupac's first album came out in 1991, and Snoop's first album came out in 1993. She graduated from college in 1986.
Yeah. Well, I mean, perhaps the drugs alter her thinking on that. I don't know how to exactly explain that, but she is employing the Barack Obama strategy.
Totally.
Of admitting the sin up front, so you don't find yourself in a situation like Ralph Northam and others, you know, who have disgraced my current home,
oh, yeah,
Virginia. But yeah, I think that politicians are human. Sometimes we hold them up on this pedestal and we think that they can't sin or they never have sinned, when in fact they are like all of us. You know, they encounter the challenges of life just as you and I do, Bill. And we have to remember that they are human. At the same time, I think that we are entrusting in them to be representatives, in many cases, of our voice in Washington or a state legislature or in the executive mansion. And when they fail to uphold those standards, you know, there are consequences.
Mm-hmm.
There should be consequences. And I think that that's why so many of us are disappointed about what's played out in Virginia. You know, to think here we are more than a week after Ralph Northam first, you know, acknowledged engaging in some of this behavior, that he's still sitting in the executive mansion, is something that I just can't believe. I'm still flabbergasted, frankly.
Yeah.
And now you have two others in the state who are facing serious charges themselves. And I think that that's probably contributed in one of the factors. But I think it's also why, as you're seeing these presidential candidates come out, they're thinking, what skeletons do I have in my closet? What
right.
should I expose to the voters now so I'm not caught by surprise?
Right. So Governor Northam's apology tour, how do you think that's going?
Not well, frankly. I mean, the fact that Gayle King had to correct him on the air when he referred to slaves as indentured servants. I mean, you know, he admits to being, you know, born into white privilege. And,
mm-hmm.
I just think that, you know, he has lost the trust of a number of Virginians, not only, by the way, for his wearing of blackface. I think that we need to remember how this all originated. It was his comments embracing abortion, third trimester abortion, and infanticide that is what sparked this anger to begin with in the initial calls for his resignation. And it's that lack of appreciation for the sanctity of life that I think contributes to both of these issues and why he finds himself now in a situation where he's probably not going to be able to recover politically. He can do a listening tour, and I think it's good that he's going out and trying to meet with people who maybe come from different backgrounds. But Bill, I don't know. This is one where he may hang on to survive, but I don't know what he's going to be able to accomplish legislatively or politically in the time he remains in office.
Yeah, Rob, all of life is repentance. Let me take a little break. Rob Louie is my guest, editor-in-chief, dailysignal.com. You definitely want to go check out dailysignal.com. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Welcome back to the show. Rob, what'd you think of my theme song I had going for you with Rebecca singing?
Yeah, we
needs
we
work.
Skipped right over that. That was great. I appreciate the
it needs work.
The extra attention today.
Yeah, I'm not good when it comes to lyrics or melody or anything like that, but I'm going to work on it. All right, we've got a congresswoman here in Minnesota, Ilhan Omar, and her little tweet has just created a firestorm. And boy, is she in the crosshairs now.
Well, it sure has. I mean, this is not the first time a member of Congress this year has found themselves in this much hot water, as you'll recall. This time it is a Democrat, though, and you've had people across both political parties condemning her words, many of which point back to a pattern now of behavior that they say is anti-Semitic. And I think it's concerning that we just need to stop, Bill, calling each other names and questioning each other's motives. And I understand that there might be an anger here with money and politics, but the way that she put it, I think, is really reprehensible. And I think it's good to see members of her own party taking such a strong stand against this behavior. I hope that she will be sincere in her efforts to reach out and truly understand those who maybe have differences with her.
Mm-hmm. Is the what you do nowadays just tweet something and then all of a sudden you're technically, I've apologized, I'm off the hook? Is that what we do now?
Well, and the apology itself was bizarre because, of course, it seems that you can't apologize without having a zinger in there attacking the other political party or trying to defer the blame on somebody else. So setting that aside, yes, I think that we are – look, in my own personal capacity and the advice I give my colleagues here at the Heritage Foundation and Daily Signal is always – think before you tweet. When you hit publish, you are broadcasting a message. It's so easy today for any individual to publish and make comments on the internet that are going to be there for the rest of your life and attributed back to you. This is particularly true for young people. I mean, you've seen it in college sports where, young people are being drafted and all of a sudden old tweets emerge, right? And they're faced with the opportunity. They have to apologize. You're going to see it more in politics as millennials come of age and run for office. So it's so important that we just take a step back. And I think particularly important if you're a politician and you're serving in a capacity as a role model for others, you just can't be careless in what you tweet. And particularly when it comes to sensitive issues like this, yes, please take a step back, take a deep breath, and really think before you do it.
Mm-hmm. And she is on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Is there any chance she might be asked to be off that, removed from that?
Well, you'll recall that what Republicans did with Steve King when he made some comments to the New York Times that he, by the way, said were misinterpreted and were not what he meant. So he forcefully denied it. And, of course, he was in a position where he didn't tweet it. And I don't think that audio ever emerged of that conversation. But even despite that, Republicans removed him and stripped him of his committee assignments. The Democrats certainly could do the same with Congresswoman Omar, but I don't know. It doesn't appear that it's going to rise to that level, and that's truly a decision that Nancy Pelosi needs to make. I think if she doesn't do this, Republicans will continue to hammer her for it, and the next time we find ourselves in a situation where a Republican might be facing a rebuke for something he or she said, they'll be able to point back to this and say, hey, what's this double standard?
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard about the new Green Deal, and I've heard that it's just a conversation starter. What should we understand it to be, Rob?
It's hard to say. I mean, what it is formally is it's a House resolution, so it's not full legislation. It's a resolution which doesn't carry the same weight. By the way, we found out just this afternoon, somewhat breaking news here, that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, is going to bring it up for a vote in the Senate, which, of course, is controlled by Republicans. It won't pass, but it will put Democrats, including many who are running for president, on the record as supporting it.
Okay.
So it's kind of a political tactic on McConnell's part. So even if the House doesn't vote for it, it seems that Republicans in the Senate will bring it up for a vote. What became so controversial initially after the Green New Deal was announced is this frequently asked questions document that Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez posted on her website, since removed, and now it's nowhere to be found. What it contained was several items that things that said you'd be able to get universal basic income even if you were unwilling to work.
Mm-hmm.
It was calling for the elimination of air travel. I mean, common things that just seem to be so radical in their perspective that I think she felt so embarrassed by it, she had to walk back from it already. So not exactly the smoothest rollout of the plan, but something that you had some pretty major figures in the Democratic Party endorse.
Mm-hmm. I am pleased to see Republicans fighting back on the extreme abortion policies. That's encouraging.
Yes, so Republicans are making a big push in Congress, and I think you'll probably see an effort at the state level as well. Certainly the March for Life, which is an annual event held here in Washington, they're out in force in different state capitals doing marches throughout the next coming months to call attention to the issues that we've seen surface at a national level. Republicans in the House are pushing for a discharge petition. So even though Republicans don't control the House anymore, if they get 218 lawmakers to sign on to this petition, they can force a vote on this bill, which is the Born Alive bill. And it would put members of Congress again on the record. It would seem that you'd have no trouble, Bill, getting 218 people to sign on to this piece of legislation, especially since in the past it won overwhelming approval. But now Republicans are short of that 218 number. They'll need about 20 Democrats to sign on in order to get there. So they'll make a big push for this. And the Senate is, of course, had tried to vote on it recently, but a Democrat objected, so they couldn't pass it unanimously. But I expect the Republicans are going to keep this issue alive. I think that they know that the majority of Americans are opposed to the late-term abortion. And if the Democrats want to adopt that radical position, they'll be in a position to suffer politically.
Rob, is Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa, is she proposing new legislation?
So Joni Ernst is somebody who's certainly been part of the conversation. You know, she is obviously recently joined the House Judiciary Committee, so she is in a role now where Republicans, as you remember, Bill, from last year's Kavanaugh hearing, didn't have somebody, a woman who is in a role as such prominent as her. Mm-hmm. So yes, she has a piece that we published on the Daily Signal that I'd encourage your listeners to check out, dailysignal.com, where she goes through this. And I think it's so important for somebody who's a mother, and you know, not that dads can't talk about this, but I think from a mom's perspective, obviously, that's a unique vantage point. And so she's a leader in the Senate. She's a conservative. She's somebody who comes from a critical state where a lot of candidates are going to speak now. That is Iowa. So, yes, she is somebody who is active and engaged on this issue.
Terrific. Rob, thank you always for joining me. I'll keep working on the theme song for you because I think it's going to be a good one when it finally gets
done. We'll check in next week and see what we hear.
Yeah, that would be terrific. Rob Louie has been my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal and the Heritage Foundation. Thank you again, and I will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bill.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a little break. We've got Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, coming up. I don't know if you have registered for a Truth for Life Spurgeon Study Bible giveaway. We're giving a couple of those away each week. I don't know why they leave one in the studio, because it's a huge tease. It's this beautiful, rich Corinthian leather. Is it Corinthian leather? I don't know. I'm just making that up. But it is a gorgeous Bible filled with Spurgeon study notes, and every day I come in here and I page through it, and it's just beautiful. We're going to give away two copies each week this month, so to enter, go to myfaithradio.com, and you can register to win a couple of those Bibles we're giving away each week. We'll take a little break, and then we will be joined by Patrick Albanese in about 3 minutes.
If you had one.
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Welcome to the show. I always look forward to talking to my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. He's joining us now on our Skype line. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
And happy winter day. I know in West Des Moines, it's a blustery one there today, isn't it?
Yeah, we got another 5-6 inches of snow on top of what we got just the other day. And so after, you know, fighting with my snowblower, I decided it's time to... My next door neighbor has the exact same snowblower as mine, as I do.
Yeah.
And I see him doing the driveway actually, he stands there and he's directing his wife, which I find very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you're doing classes over there or these seminars, but he stands, he goes, "Now, honey, don't forget the sidewalk." Very interesting. I think, you know, I think he had heart surgery recently, so he's still involved, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, his throws the snow about 15 feet. Mine was kind of like throwing it about a foot or two and then shoving the rest of it down the driveway. And now due to my expert repair work, I have thrown out my back.
That's not good.
It's being thrown.
You're more of a fix-it guy than a call-to-fix-it guy.
Yes, I have a phrase that I don't know if it initiated with me or if my dad implanted it in a chip in my brain when I was a kid. But it has allowed me to make a lot of discoveries in life and then caused more grief. And that phrase is, how hard can it be?
Mm-hmm.
So I look at something and I think, well, you know, it's just a couple of things on a snowblower. How hard could it be?
And you're trying to replace the blades, right, that sweep the snow up?
Yeah. So it turns out that they put a couple of nuts and bolts and screws in positions that, you know, only somebody with very, very, very slender fingers.
And the right wrench, which you have to order from Taiwan.
Which I did have to order. Yes. I did have to go back and get a special tool.
Now, did you watch some online videos? Is that how you learn how to do stuff? Or do you read instructions? Or what's the, what do people do nowadays? Because I don't do anything.
Well, I'm a big fan of the YouTube way of looking for things. Google is a useless search engine. YouTube takes you right to a video, and it's usually.
Can you trust it?
I do. I have dismantled and repaired my washing machine for various parts that have given out on it. I think four times now. I've replaced a clutch. Now, you know, I can walk around and say, yeah, I did the clutch of my washing machine. Like, I know what I'm talking about.
And people don't ask follow-up questions if you say that kind of stuff.
No, because
they leave you alone.
There's the fear. They're saying, why this? I didn't even know the washing machine had a clutch. I mean, neither.
I think we've got an automatic. He's got a clutch.
He's got a clutch. Oh, that thing's old. Oh, yeah, 20 years. It's 20 years old. And but you know what? I've kept the thing going. So, like the pieces I had to buy today were about $70, and before I embark on any project, I go, well, hang on, I don't want to spend $70 on a repair. And I go down the aisle where the new snowblowers are, and I went right back to the repair section. I said, I'll take those, please.
Yeah, but didn't those new snowblowers look nice? Come on.
Oh, they were just begging to be used.
Oh yeah, me home now. I can hear them crying out.
Yeah. So, but I'm not in the mood to do a second mortgage or home equity loan just to throw some snow into the neighbor's yard.
Yeah. Well, it'd be awfully nice if your neighbor got the hint and just came over and plowed your driveway as well. That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah. Well, I have one of my neighbors did get one of those new really fancy dual stage, the two stage ones. I think you have one.
I do have one of those. Yes.
Yeah. And, I was admiring it, and he was out, you know, when somebody gets a new snowblower in town, they're like, they're doing the streets.
Oh, yeah.
they're doing their yard.
I have a relatively new snowblower, and I was out, and the other day I thought my neighbor was out of town because usually he's out in the morning or there's tire tracks and there was nothing. So I went and did his driveway thinking, you know, when he comes back, he'll be glad it's done. And mm-hmm. turns out he was home.
And he was watching from the front window.
Yeah, with a nice cup of coffee. But then, like 3 days later, I come home and my driveway's done. And I thought, well, isn't that nice? And it turns out he does a better job on my driveway than I do. So I turned all duties over to him.
Yeah. Tell you what, you do my driveway, I'll do yours. That way we're both working. Nobody's got an unfair advantage, but my driveway is nicer.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had a neighbor. I look out and I see him with the new snowblower, the two stage thing, and he starts going up and down, and he's doing my sidewalk, and I kind of wave, and I'm thinking, this is great. I go back in the house, I come out an hour later, and he's only done half of it. He hasn't done the other half, and I'm thinking, well, what a jerk, right?
Well, what about the good neighborly thing? When is it appropriate to do a neighborly thing, and when is it like you don't have to come do my driveway? I'll do it myself. When are you welcome and when are you not welcome?
Yeah, I don't know. I have one neighbor on one side and they've bought a new house somewhere else. And so the kids are living there now. And evidently they don't know how to, I know they have a snowblower and they're not using it or something happened over there. And I see them out there with the shovels And I should go, but it's every single time. And, you know, I raked their leaves for them. Granted, they had fallen in my yard, you know, on my side of the fence.
Yeah.
You know how hard that was to rake those up and get them back over the fence.
I know. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. But I bagged them for them and then threw them back over.
That was nice.
No, I don't know. That's a really good question. The people that we bought the house from were an elderly couple, as we intend to be someday. And,
that's your goal, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. That's the goal. And Ted, my next door neighbor, who's the greatest neighbor, you know, I mean, I remember knocking on his door and I said, hey, I think my sump pump went out. And he says, well, hop in the car. And we hop in the car and he takes me over to the big box store and buys. He goes, I put the last one in. So he says, I know exactly what to get. And he comes down and he helps me put the sump pump in. It's like, I wasn't asking for help. I knew you had done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, John and Marsha, and I'm not kidding. John and Marsha were the name of the people we bought the house from. I think that's one of those John Marsha things. They were kind of older, and Ted did it all.
Oh, that's really nice.
Plowed their driveway, did their sidewalks, cut their grass. You know, they needed anything, and you know, Ted was holding down two jobs and still found time. I should be more like Ted. And you know, maybe I should go over there now that he's directing his wife and say, "Would you like me to do your driveway for?"
All right, I want an update on the daddy-daughter dance. How'd it go?
No one got hurt.
Okay.
Although, you know, there's a threshold that you pass, and I think this was it. My daughter's in fourth grade now. And this was, I believe, our fifth daddy-daughter dance. And for the first four, you know, you kind of walk in and you kind of do the sort of wink nod at the other guys going, I don't see you, you don't see me, right?
Right. Nobody wants to see other guys dancing, right?
No, we run into each other in a business situation. We forget this happened, correct?
Right. Exactly.
You know, you trust me. I mean, you might be a financial planner, but the way you're dancing, I wouldn't give you my money.
Yeah, no smartphones out. None whatsoever. Yeah, I don't want anything being recorded.
Nothing at all. No. And but there's a threshold, and it sort of paths cross. It's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters. And I think this was the year where you say, you know what? I'm not embarrassed to be seen dancing anymore. It's my daughter.
Nice.
And coincidentally, that's the same year that the daughter is now embarrassed to be seen with her dad. Because I noticed, you know, my daughter who used to have all this fun at the daddy-daughter dance, and she's having fun, but she won't look at me.
She's too embarrassed.
I'm doing the floss. I'm doing the running man. I got cabbage patch. I'm doing it all.
And you got sweat rings. You're just a complete mess. Of course she's embarrassed.
I said, we've crossed a threshold where I'm no longer embarrassed, but she is.
Oh, that's funny. That's what I call perfect timing.
Perfect timing. God's economy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Patrick Albanese is my guest. I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, we will rejoin the discussion. Take a short break and be right back. I have on my Skype line my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, and we were just talking about the big social outing with your daughter. Is she 9?
She's 9 years old.
Years old. The daddy-daughter dance. You survived it. Congratulations. How is your small group at church, and what are you guys doing as a small group?
You know, we lost one of the families because they moved to Delaware. Job opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of regrouping, we're looking for some fresh blood.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So we've stagnated since, you know, I think that family was Vicky was the wife, and she was the organizational kind of tour de force of our small group. And without her, you know, saying, hey, let's do this. How about let's meet on Sunday after the service. Let's not pick a topic. Let's just see what the pastor is going to be doing that week. So we've kind of stagnated.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys that's in my small group, I had dinner with him at the daddy-daughter dance. That's kind of a tradition. We do dinner together, he and I and our daughters. And so we actually did just talk about this recently. It's like, we got to kind of get off the old duffaroo and find something to study. Do you have any suggestions for us?
I got lots. Right? I have lots. Yeah, I'll email them to you. I've got a number of good suggestions.
Yeah, did you not teach Sunday school the other day?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
How'd it go?
Well, I thought it went fine. I was filling in for my friend Jeff Verdorn, who's my 4 to 5 o'clock guest today. So it's really hard to walk in behind his footsteps and try to appear intelligent. So I think they had a nice time, though, with me. And I had a great time with them.
Who doesn't like a substitute teacher?
Exactly. We're not gonna work it hard today. I just played a movie.
Right. Yeah, Toy Story 3. That's always that never fails to
Right. Let's talk about your small group, though. You are among married couples, and I'm curious as to the benefits that come from being in transparent groups where people are talking about what's going on. And is there the connection between the mind and the body? Now you are just a little frustrated over the snowblower repair, and now you hurt your back. I mean, how does mind and body work? Because I know you're a workout guy and you love to stay in shape. And, I've been thinking about healthy marriages, healthy bodies, healthy emotions. And do you ever have these discussions in your small group?
You know, we do. One of the women in the group recently, last year, I think was kind of a New Year's resolution. She had felt that her health had gotten out of control. Her weight had gotten out of control. And so she kind of hunkered down and she's had this amazing transformation. And she's, her before and after pictures are spectacular. But we sometimes talk about that because it is a balance, it's... My small group has been an interesting study because I'm one of the older guys in it with the youngest kids. So it's interesting to be sitting with people that are 10 or 15 years younger than me that have kids that are 10 years older than my kids. And wow. So they're telling me what I'm going to be going through.
Yeah.
And yet, as sort of a... they don't use that phrase health fanatic anymore, but I guess you could kind of put me into, I'm a health fan, maybe not the fanatic, but I'm a health fan. I've had them reach out to me, at times. The guy I had dinner with the other night, in fact, he's a type 1 diabetic. And so we exchange actual, eating ideas. I think we could discuss more of that stuff. It is amazing how... and it took a while with our small group to say, let's just open up and everything's on the table. Any topic.
Yeah. I think that's really healthy. I mean, there are lots of books that I get on my desk and a lot of talk about the emotional stress that comes in marriages. And it seems that, and Rebecca and I were chatting about this before the show, that you can say you're stressed out, but then you always add in to that everything you're doing, which gives you permission to be stressed out.
Yeah, you got to show how full the plate is.
Yes, yes. And if you do that, then you're somehow let off the hook, but then you come home with an emotional and physical hangover, so to speak, from all the exhaustion and stress and everything else. And is it possible that at that time of the day, your spouse is getting left over you?
Yes. I'm just going to say that in a very quiet voice in case my wife is listening. I'm a blessed guy, and sometimes my wife doesn't have, this is something I struggle with. My wife can hit me with the tough love stuff. And I'm not good at that. I just kind of absorb and kind of walk away and mope. But if I am shortchanging her because I'm under stress for things, she lets me know. She says, Hey, you can't let that stuff affect, how you treat me or how you feel toward me. She goes, when I walk in and you're Mr. Grumpy Pants, or I think it's Grumple Pants. I'm not sure. There's a phrase that she's used.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not fair to me. And I'm like, of course, the first thing you want to do is tag that right back.
Sure.
Just go, get defensive. Since we're calling, calling each other out here.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not calling anybody out here. And I kind of wish I could do that, but I'm probably more guilty of it than she is. You know, she's had we had a Broadway show in town. Whenever there's a Broadway show in town, she works ridiculous hours. And she'll just kind of let me know ahead of time, not excusing the behavior, but she's like, I'm spent. So that's kind of, you know, you're unfortunately going to get the lesser version of me for till I get some sleep in my system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give warnings. And so it just sometimes accumulates, and eventually she has to say, you know, I believe I'm getting the discount version of you right now.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the negative effects of your anger, temper? You know, I think most men have a little bit of that in them, and I'm not saying you do, but I'm sure at some point stuff gets frustrating and anger comes out, or frustration. What are some of the negative effects, and how do you get on the other side of that?
But the real negative effect is complete self-absorption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't think about anybody but me. And unfortunately, when I'm in that self-absorption mode, it's because it's a negative thing. Like, oh, you know, as you know, entertainers, people that are entertainers for a living, always live with this constant fear that they'll be exposed as having actually no talent, no ability. Or whatever last job they had, they say, well, that's the last one.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm not hireable anymore. And you can wallow. I can. I will talk about me.
That's okay. Doesn't apply to a guy with a daily radio show. So go ahead.
No, I don't know. It's on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
You know, I think it's really cool, by the way, that your station has that 10-year probationary period. Just in case. Just in case.
Yeah.
So, but that would be the most negative thing, because really, in order to deal with it, and my wife kind of hit me with this the other day, she said, this is what you do. And if you want to know how to get out of it, the answer is do things for other people.
Mm.
And of course, it is amazing how the brain works, or this wallowing, it can work, which says, well, the last thing I feel like I can do is anything for anybody. But of course, in looking at what she had said, I said, but that's actually the best, absolutely the best advice. Forget about yourself for a second and go do something for somebody else. So that's how I have to get out of it. But it's a struggle, because of course I'm wallowing in this, you know, misery of, oh. And of course you look around, you say, I got a roof over my head. I got a family. Everybody's healthy. It's, what more do you want? What more do you want in life? I said that the human ability to be perpetually unsatisfied when everything's perfect is amazing to me. And I realize that's maybe we're built partly that way, because there's only one, God is the only thing that can fill that.
Mm-hmm.
God is the only thing that can fill that.
Yeah.
And that's maybe why it's in us. It's like, aha, you're looking in the wrong place.
Yeah. Of course, Rebecca sent me a great quote by C.H. Spurgeon today, and I sent it on to you. And I will read it unless you have it handy, unless you'd like to read it.
Let's see. Is this the – wait, where'd it go? I have heard of some good old woman in a cottage who had nothing but a piece of bread and a little water. Lifting up her hand, she said as a blessing, what? All this and Christ too.
Wow.
Powerful. Yeah, I'm not that person.
I know, but what a beautiful, beautiful thought, that this little woman in a cottage with nothing but a piece of bread and a little water lifts up her hands and says, what? All this and Christ too? It's like, yeah. Oh, you hit it on the head when you said you have a roof over your head, you've got healthy kids. It's amazing. We don't live with much contentment. And we need to encourage each other to do so.
No, we really should. And it isn't just, you know, hitting somebody over the head saying, come on, be grateful for what you've got. It really, be grateful. It's good. And I remember all my years living in Los Angeles. And of course, everybody in Los Angeles is, well, you know, I'm only doing the acting thing till the restaurant gig takes off.
Right.
That works. But no matter what job you did, people would say, well, what else do you do? And you know, I was smarter in my 20s and 30s, of course. And my response was always, why isn't what I do enough? What more should I be doing? Why I don't know you. And you're judging what I do, saying, well, you obviously aren't happy. You can't be happy. Mm-hmm. You can't be only having this or only doing this. And I had a great life. And it was always a mystery to me why people would say that. Well, what else? This is it. You know, this is all you are. You go, I'm a happy guy. I've got it made.
Yeah.
But after 20 years of that, you know, you sometimes it takes hold and you start to think that way. Maybe I need more. Maybe I need more.
And you talk about just being grateful, and you sent me a quote from Tim Keller, which I loved, and I'd like to read that to kind of wrap things up. Gifts from God that are not acknowledged as such are deadly to the soul, for they thicken the illusion of self-sufficiency that leads to overconfidence and sets us up for failure. Yikes.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Gosh. Why do you have to bring that stuff back?
I know. It's a great, it's a great line. True.
Yeah, we often think, you know, gosh, I love how we will sometimes say to ourselves, well, God, why did you do this to me? And then we think that, well, I'll just get me out of this mess that God put me in. Oh, that's interesting. It's completely backwards. Mm-hmm. I got me in this mess and God can get me out.
Yeah.
But we of course say, no, God put me in this mess and I'll take care of it.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, we have only a minute left. Do you want to give us your invention of the week, the exhaust vent idea?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's this little area. I was out taking the dog in the backyard and I go, God, look at that. Look, it's all melted right here. And I realized it's the exhaust vent for my dryer. I'm going, I need to extend that thing and have it go out where I can move it around the driveway. Then for every load of laundry I do, I clear another section of driveway, double win, laundry done, driveway clear.
Beautiful.
Environmentally friendly.
Totally. I love your invention of the week. Thanks so much, Patrick, for doing the show. Have a great week. I'll talk to you next week, I hope.
Yep.
Patrick Albanese has been my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll take a short break and be back with lots more in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with a Faith in Life Minute. Perhaps you're feeling hopeless today about your finances. Author and financial expert Crystal Payne says there's always hope to turn things around.
Realize that you're never stuck. I think so many people, they're underemployed or unemployed right now, and it's, you know, it's hard and it's scary, but to realize that you're not stuck and you can always at least make little changes that can help propel you in a good direction. And so start by, you know, setting some financial goals. Maybe it's something as simple as saying, you know, this year we are not going to use our credit cards, or we're going to pay off our credit cards, or, you know, set some line in the sand that is going to make a difference in your life. And so that if you work toward that every month, every week, every day, you can look back and you can see, wow, we really made some progress here.
Get more financial help from Crystal Payne at myfaithradio.com.
Thanks so much, Patrick Albanese and Rob Bluey. Just a great first hour. Coming up in our second hour, my friend and Bible teacher, mentor, Jeff Redorn is in studio. So we're going to talk about the rapture. Why should we study it? That's going to be the big question to get things started in hour two. If you have questions about the rapture and if you want to send it, you can start right now. Email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and I can ask your question on the air. But we will be chatting about it all coming up in the second hour. And we're very excited about that. You know, we used to seem to be really excited about talking about the rapture. Remember all those Left Behind series and all those books? And it used to be a hot topic. Now we don't seem to talk about it that much anymore. And we don't seem to teach about it very much anymore in the church. And I know this can be a little controversial because people have different positions on when they think the rapture is going to take place. And let's just look at what the Bible teaches. And I know there's going to be a little bit of you know, varied opinions on this topic today. So we're going to study it, and we're going to see what God's Word says, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes to get things started with my friend Jeff Verdorn, who happens to have brought his beautiful wife Julie with, but I'm not going to put her on the show today, just so you know. She's not going to talk, even though I'd like her to, but she's not going to. All right, be back in just a minute. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.